Hi, it's Joe Lowry. Welcome to the Global Lithium Podcast. On today's episode, I have Dean Frankel, who is the head of strategic business development at solid state battery developer Solid Power, based in Denver, Colorado. I've wanted to get somebody from the solid state arena on the podcast for some time. I hope you enjoy part one, which was originally intended actually just to be the recording of a trailer. And after talking for 25 minutes, I decided it just made sense to put this out there as a part one. We will record a part two to this discussion in mid-March. But for now, we talk about what is a solid-state battery, what safety and energy density advantages it could it bring to the lithium battery world. And then we talk a little bit about where raw materials need to go to bring in an era of solid state batteries. So this is a pretty short, long form, but I think you're going to enjoy it. And with that, I will leave you to Dean Frankel of Solid Power. Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. Today we are taking a diversion from the norm, and I have with me, via the magic of Zoom, Dean Frankel of Solid Power, and he is accompanied by his handler in a white shirt, and we won't go into any details on that, but Dean, welcome to the podcast.
Just leaving him hanging on my handler. I feel important there.
Well, it's important to be important. Okay, so as we normally do, let us get to your backstory. Where are you from? Where'd you go to school? How'd you get where you are now?
Yeah, I'm from Miami Beach, Florida, which is was a nice place to grow up in for sure. Being a millennial, growing up in a barrier town, that was probably the places most threatened by climate change. That sort of dominated me coming of age. So I went to the University of Pennsylvania and did my own major focused on energy topics, and climate change was sort of the cause that I, you know, wrote about to get into school and then carried into an engineering-based curriculum. At the time, my freshman year in college, I got to see Elon Musk speak. So he is also an alum of Penn. And that was a pretty foundational experience for me, in the sense that not many people knew who Tesla was or who he was at the time. And he was, as outrageous then as he is today. So he was talking about, getting an ICBM and trying to launch a rocket to Mars.
Yeah. Well, I heard those stories. I listened to a podcast just a few days ago, and I actually put it in my last LinkedIn post. It was like 3.5 hours long, and he talks about all the whole going to Russia to try to buy the ICBMs, and pricing, yep, and those sorts of things. So that's interesting. So you got out of Penn, I assume, with some kind of piece of paper, and how did the path lead to Solid Power?
Yep. The reason I brought up Elon Musk is Penn is a super finance-focused school. So when I was coming out of school, everyone around me had jobs like 2 years before they graduated, and I was sitting there like, what am I going to do? So after lots of networking and soul-searching, I found a job at Enernoc. They're acquired now by an Italian utility company, Enel. They did demand response services, and their CEO the president at the time, during a staff meeting, said that energy storage was 8 years away, and this is at the beginning of 2013. I was like, this guy does not know what is in store. So long story short, I left that job after about 7 months and found a role leading energy storage research at Lux Research. So I did that for about 3 years. And I got tired of watching an energy transition unfold from the sidelines. So
I've heard that before.
Yeah. And I realize that they're like, one, that's sort of the model of an industry research firm is to train someone, and typically they go out and you know, spread their wings in some other capacity. And for me, I wanted to get in the industry. So there were two areas I identified as growth areas in batteries that I thought I could really make an impact on. One was recycling batteries, and then the other one was solid state batteries. So I sort of plotted my exit. I actually got to spend some time in South America, unfortunately. While I was in the Atacama, did not go to the Solaris. And upon my return, started consulting, and Solid Power was my first client. So after four projects of consulting them on, you know, what's next for them as a business, I said, when are you going to hire me? And eventually that happened.
Okay, so you're at Solid Power. So for most of my audience may not be clear on what a solid state battery is. So
yep.
You want to give the solid state 101 course in 3 minutes or less?
I will do that. Yeah. So solid state battery is a fairly generic term. We remove a liquid electrolyte, which conducts in a traditional lithium ion cell. That is what conducts lithium ions. And we replaced it with a solid ion conducting material. So I think Dr. Gao also explained this very well in your earlier episodes, but there are many different types of solid ion conducting materials, and like the fundamental innovation that has allowed us to get to, you know, this being a commercial reality is the ionic conductivity of these solid ion conducting materials is almost as good, if not better than, liquid electrolytes. So that's the material science innovation that's allowed us to get here. The advantages that you have with that solid ion conducting materials is that you remove the lowest common denominator in battery safety issues in the liquid electrolyte, and you replace it with a material that has better thermal properties. So that provides, I would say, inherent safety, but I would say a safer package is really the way to, because until we prove it, I don't think you can say inherent safety. And then because you have that solid ion conducting material, you can use things like lithium metal, which are otherwise unstable. So high level answer to what's a solid state battery, it's you remove the liquid electrolyte, and as a result, the benefits that you can get are safety and increased energy density.
So tell me a little bit about the increased energy density. If I think people have heard for a long time that the original lithium battery was actually designed with a metallic anode, and there were too many fires to let that go on for long.
Yeah.
So you want to just kind of reprise why there would be higher energy density in a given space, and then what the impacts would be not only on anodes but on cathode material.
Absolutely. Joe, we are going back to the future. If you look at the Nobel Prize laureates for lithium ion batteries, you know, it can really trace the history. And Solid Power very much is trying to push that approach back to the original lithium ion batteries. So original lithium ion batteries had a different type of cathode and a lithium metal anode. That is challenging to get some of the performances that we have with lithium ion today, but it's also today we have much better tools in our toolbox, namely in the solid electrolytes. We're taking sort of a hybrid approach. On the cathode side, we are not using the conversion reaction type cathodes. We are using transition metal oxide, which would be an NMC. So it's like an intercalation type cathode paired up with a lithium metal anode. So how do you get the energy density? It comes, in our case, exclusively from the lithium metal anode. We have our lithium metal is the lightest metal. It is able to store more than 10 times the energy on a weight basis as compared to graphite. So it is just a phenomenal material. That said, you know, you spoke about fires. It is absolutely a challenging material. And again, we've improved the tools in our toolbox with things like solid electrolytes that form really stable interfaces with that lithium metal.
Well, I mean, trying to get lithium metal back in the anode after the original failure has been going on for at least 18 years, because I first started trying to market FMC stabilized lithium metal powder in Japan in 2002.
Yep.
And it's just, yeah, it's been a long, hard ride. And that's kind of my, the way I always characterize this is you guys will be an overnight success after 20 years of people putting efforts into it. And assuming you are going to be a success.
I don't know about overnight, but certainly we hope.
That's what I'm saying. That's the thing. The overnight, people will characterize it on Twitter as an overnight success when people have been working at this for a long, long time.
Even longer than that, right? It literally goes back to the first lithium ion batteries that we're using, or it weren't even lithium ion batteries. They were lithium metal batteries. And again, with better tools in our toolbox and 50 years of both engineering and material science, we've gotten to the point where we can seriously start thinking about lithium metals in a commercial standpoint again.
Yeah, and that harkens me to a Vimeo video I watched of your CEO, Doug Campbell, talking at, you know, BNEF, or yeah, I guess that's BNEF. And he talked about partnerships and a 5 to 7 year roadmap. And, you know, so let's get in a little bit to where you guys are in the process now, what you think about a timetable for commercial, and then where you see the real first intro, what applications, what niches will you get into first? The thing that Doug said that I liked the most, though, and I think that it made me think about it differently, was that you're trying to build your model that works within the existing battery infrastructure.
Yep.
This isn't like all the, you know, Simon Moore's long list of gigafactories aren't going to all have to be scrapped and right. billions of dollars of capital written off just to accommodate the solid state battery. So take that question where you will, sir.
Sounds good. Yeah. I'll start with on the commercialization front. So, this may surprise people listening, but automotive is our first and it's our last market. And then anything else is sort of in between that. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have joint development agreements today with Ford and BMW, the goal of which is to get a battery to be good enough to go into a car and then sort of figure out what's next after that. So that's, you know, we're shipping cells to our partners coming off of our pilot line. We already started this year and we'll continue to improve as our cells get bigger and increasingly mature in terms of their energy density and power performance. So that's when I say, you know, auto is our first market. I mean, that is, I wouldn't say that that's the commercial application, but that is the priority. Everything else will sort of follow that cell development roadmap and those pathways. And then, you know, last market being like we are probably 5 to 8 years away from automotive introduction, depending on how aggressive things can be and what volumes we're talking about. So the, you know, that would be really the major commercialization push in terms of, you know, getting gigawatt hour scale batteries. In the interim, like where does solid state have a dramatic impact? There's several markets. So things like aerospace is an example, both in satellites, but also in things like pseudo-satellites. Weight is absolutely critical. Self-discharge or low self-discharge can also be an enabling feature in some reserve battery applications. And then if you start thinking about safety as an enabling feature, areas like medical devices could also be a reasonable medium-term application for solid state.
Well, given the military has more and more concern about both lithium supply and security, and has the ability
to spend large quantities of money when they like a technology. How much of your time do you, right now is involved in discussions with, you know, for satellites, for other things? And I realize satellites don't have to be of military origin, but often they are.
Yep. Yeah, we, where do I go with that? So early on, when we were talking about, you know, military and government contracting, Solid Power was able to exist and buy down technical risk for 5 years before we took, before we raised our Series A financing, which was the first dilutive financing into the company. So a lot of our early work was focused on applications like reserve batteries, as an example, or batteries for space applications, funded by both industry and by government contracts. That has shifted really with the automotive push. So if you look at in terms of our commercial focus today, in terms of our R&D focus, it's really like 95% auto focused. But we do have the fortune of having our CEO, Doug, previously have led and co-founded a space systems company here in Colorado. So there's a thriving space industry locally, and definitely for commercial applications, we've had discussions on what could be a realistic pathway to get to those markets, and how would that differ from our automotive roadmap.
Okay, I'm going to ask, in for the listener, this is really a teaser edition. We're going to do a longer version, but we're trying to sort out how to record this on the Zoom platform, and if you actually hear this, we will have been successful. If you don't, nothing matters. But when my final question on this teaser episode is, when you look at the current situation in lithium metal supply,
yep,
and when you look at, okay, let's go 10 years out, let's go 12 years out to when, okay, your commercialization happens and the automobile industry wants to use it, and EV penetration is, you know, 15 to 20 instead of 1.75 to 2.25. Where do you get, I mean, do you think of, are you spending time on the metal side of this from going back to the ground? Because right now there isn't enough lithium chloride produced on this planet to allow you a very large penetration, even if all of it was turned into metal and went to you.
Yeah. So I think in batteries, there's always the question, but what about cost? And lithium metal in particular, thin lithium metal foils is one of those. So I know you, like Paul Graves spoke about this. They believe printed SLMP could be a solution. We tend to focus our time on that question a lot, like how cheap can lithium metal get? But today the big delta in cost is really on post-processing. So if you're talking about thin foils, you make the lithium metal ingot. So start with the lithium chloride, electrolyze it, get the lithium metal ingot. I may be simplifying to anyone here who actually knows about lithium metal production, but my apologies.
That's kind of the big, there aren't that many steps.
Yeah. And then after that, typically we're talking about an extrusion press and then rolling the lithium. And the cost delta going from the ingot at, let's say, you know, I don't know, $100, $130 a kilo to what we are procuring in the foils is more than an order of magnitude today.
Yeah.
So that's the first focus, is how do you make this, how do you get the format thin enough and cheap enough to be what we call automotive grade, right? Cheap enough to that any auto player is going to be say, yes, that's good enough. And then simultaneously, you know, focus on downstream. I think, you know, I would hope that it's not my job to say you need to prioritize lithium chloride. And we do have the advantage, right, in that lithium chloride is typically a precursor, at least in brine processes. But I do spend a lot of my time promoting supply chain development on the post-processing. So the extrusions, the rolling, or just thinking about it completely differently. So approaches like the printed SLMP or approaches like the like a deposition route.
Yeah, I, well, that was going to you know, this was supposed to be my last question, but this is an interesting discussion. Well, I think one of the benefits that you have is that the largest metal producer in the world, lithium, is also trying to make solid state batteries. Gangfen's got a solid state battery plant. I've been in it. You know, you may not view them as a competitor, but I think you might find out that they have some good thoughts on this. But my point is that somebody has to bring the resources to bear to make the changes, because lithium, if anything, lithium is almost an anti-innovation industry. And by your smile, I'm going to say that you don't disagree with that statement. And
I think, you know, there are thriving R&D teams within even the, you know, some of the lithium organizations that have been fodder for this podcast. So I'll push back a little bit on that, but you know, what the challenge is really just, this doesn't just require R&D to define what the product is. It really requires a commercialization push. Because I, you know, a lot of people have said, for example, that rolling lithium is never going to get there, but no one's tried at speeds relevant enough or at volumes relevant enough to get the cost down.
That was the SLNP problem. Everybody loved SLNP. Whether I was in Japan or Korea, this is great stuff. Shin'etsu wanted to build they had a business plan for $1 billion battery materials business 15 years ago. But then it all came down to, how do you get it on a substrate at commercial speed? Well, you still don't. So, we'll see what happens. I'm certainly not trying to knock the lithium industry, but I'm just telling you, you have a very small industry that has always found it easier to keep doing things the way they were doing it, because they were making enough money rather than innovate. And there's always a few points of light in every organization who would like to see things done differently. But I mean, that's been a challenge for the 30 years I've been in the business, is that, you know, whether you are going to try to do electrolytic hydroxide, that goes back 20 years. And say, no, we've got a plan. It makes good enough stuff. We'll just stay with that. And you haven't seen your black box, you know, lithium production. I mean, and the black boxes have been out there for 15 to 20 years, and we still don't have one at commercial. So I'm hoping your 5 to 7 to 8 year time frame brings about the other changes that need to happen to make this a reality. But absolutely, with that, I'm going to bring this abbreviated version to a close with one rapid fire question for you and one for the guy sitting to your left, who isn't even on camera, just to show, there he is. Okay. Mr. Barrier Island, Miami. Now you're living in Colorado.
Yep.
So, what's the biggest difference besides weed?
I think that's everywhere.
That's why I said, let's just rule out weed, because that's a simple
answer. What's the biggest difference? Well, we have just been getting dumped on with snow, so that's a big one. Humidity, I would say that's a big one. As a fellow runner, Joe, I know the humidity will sap you quick, and it's about running paradise in Colorado.
Yeah, when I lived in Reno and I would do a 20-mile run, I would have salt stains all over me when I finished. As opposed to when I lived in Houston, I would have to change my stuff in the middle. I stop at home, change my stuff, and keep going because I was so wet. All right.
It's the shoes.
The guy next to you in the white shirt that buttons down, I just want to know when you're going to get with the Solid Power dress code program. You've been there 3 weeks. You started wearing allegedly suit type garb, and now you've lost the jacket. When are you going to start looking like D?
Starting as early as next week is my time frame.
That's what we like. We like commitment.
I
think that ought to be on his objectives for 2020.
I don't know. We don't want him to steep that load to begin with. maybe just a little bit above me, we can start with.
Okay, so with that rather meaningless discourse, we will bring this teaser episode of the Global Lithium Podcast to a close. These guys will be back, and I don't know how Will will be dressed in March when we record the full version, but I'm expecting it to be different than it was today. With that, I will say good night and good luck.
This has been another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Global Lithium or on LinkedIn under Joe Lowry. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.